Most tax pros leave a message.
It's Jane. I'm moving on to a TurboTax expert who beat your price. Adam Devine, tell him how I feel.
Hey, tax pro, she's been thinking twice. Best believe TurboTax will beat your price. This is a tax break.
Switch to a TurboTax Live expert and we'll beat what you paid your pro last tax season. Make the switch at TurboTax.com/beat your price. TurboTax full service only. Sign up by 12/20/2024 and file by 4/1/2025. Full details at TurboTax.com/beat your price.
Hey, happy Monday, the 30th of September. This is the WOW episode number 32, the Woody Overton Window. Mike Agovino here with Woody Overton. Happy last day of September, Woody.
Yep, finally cooled off some this weekend, in the 60s in the morning and the 80s during the daytime. Almost fall weather, right? And we hope everybody stays safe from that hurricane. And of course, we're recording this early, so we don't know, right?
Is this your, what's your favorite weather time of the year in Louisiana?
Oh, it's absolutely my favorite time. Fall, like fall, winter, summer, then it's spring last.
Really? Spring last. That's interesting. Yeah. I would have thought summer last.
Spring last because there's no football and there's only turkey hunting season. And most time in the spring is too windy and shit to fish. So yeah, spring's my least favorite.
But it doesn't have the oppressive heat that July and August have, but that's not a factor.
Yeah,
for Woody Overton.
No, because you can drink beer and in the river and drink beer and swim and all that, right? Barbecue and stuff like that.
Never too far from a 12-ounce curl. Okay. Well, let's get back into it. So we're tracking with episode 10 from With the Benefit of Hindsight, which we called Free as a Bird on that podcast. Free being spelled F-R-E-E-H for Louis Free, who was the former head of the FBI, former director of the FBI, who was asked to perform a quote-unquote independent investigation by the Penn State Board of Trustees. We'll talk about that. That's the focus of this episode is Free's, again, quote, independent investigation and everything that went into that and how it relates back to this story overall. So just to put things into context from a timing standpoint, we have November of 2011, early November, where the presentment comes down, the charges are announced against Sandusky, he's arrested, the Board of Trustees just several days later determines to fire Joe Paterno, Graham Spanier, Tim Curley, the athletic director, and Gary Schultz, the VP at Penn State. And fast forward from there, 7 months, we have the trial that we've spent our last couple of episodes talking about. Sandusky is convicted on June 22nd of 2012, and less than a month later, we're now in the middle of July. The Free report is, well, some of the Free report is made public, but Louis Free goes public with the results of his investigation. And so I love this episode 10 because I think it does a great job of illustrating the enormous amount of corruption involved in this case. There's stuff that I think, if you listen to the whole episode, will kind of blow you away that people with the kind of credibility that goes with the title of being former director of the FBI, that people would sell that title and the credibility that goes with it for millions of dollars to then deliver results that are promised to that client that hires them. So yes, they're doing an investigation, but it's not an investigation out to find the truth. It's an investigation out to exonerate the people that hired you to investigate. And in this particular case, they paid Louis Free nearly $7 million to conduct this quote unquote investigation.
It's crazy.
it's a good business, man. I mean, you look at the business. I don't know how many people are in the business of doing this, but you know, it's really the trading on the credibility of a title in government to allow you to get away with anything. I mean, you're just plain selling a story for money. You want the story. Yeah.
Sorry. It's so different than me and my consulting work. Trading on the title and trading on my experience and everything else and in polygraphs and stuff too. But there certainly are good and bad in every profession, right? I've had murder trials where the defense puts up these so-called expert witnesses who are trading on their years of experience and, you know, doing whatever, and then they come back and hit them with, well, how many trials have you testified in? And basically, you know, they're a hired gun who would say anything for money. Yeah, I'm not the person. I tell them I'm not going to plead out, or you better plead out, or you're going to prison, or whatever.
But that's a spot on analogy. These experts for hire for trials that are getting paid whatever they're getting paid to appear as an expert witness, and you know that becomes basically their profession, being an expert witness and delivering the testimony that they're asked to deliver. And some people do that without, and we had some of those actually in this case, but the it is just fascinating before I got involved in a lot of stuff with you guys, before I got involved in my work with John Ziegler, I just always assumed the good side of this. I always assumed those people with the big titles and the badges and were honorable people. And you know, you try and put yourself back into where your head was in 2012 while all this was unfolding. And, you know, I was just another person in the audience casually watching as this stuff came up on the news. And there was zero doubt in my mind about any of the story as it was relayed to us by the media. I was certain that all of these people were crooks. It was perfectly logical to me that Penn State would cover up something like this to protect their football program that had to be worth hundreds of millions of dollars to the university. And so as just a layperson sitting out there, just taking what's being fed to you out of the television, you bought it all hook, line, and sinker because you weren't trained, at least I wasn't trained, to suspect that they were lying to me. And
yeah, most people don't want to question, you know, the system, right? And then you just take it, you spoon fed and force fed, and you go along. Yeah, you know, you're taught to respect and whatever, right? And believe, certainly if it's on the media, and you know, these retired director of the FBI says it, well, certainly he's not lying, right?
Well, and if you look at Free and look at the stuff that happened while he was FBI director, I mean, he was FBI director during the whole Richard Jewell 1996 Atlanta Olympics mess, the whole Ruby Ridge mess.
Yes.
The Waco mess.
Yeah.
What else? It was another one. So, and he was not, I think a lot of times the assumption we make in the public is if somebody, you know, if a new administration comes in and somebody is named as director of the FBI, you assume they are a career FBI agent, that they've grown through the ranks of the FBI, and that this is a promotion upward from within the bureau, not an external appointment of a business guy that you owe a favor because of campaign contributions or whatever. And that's what it was. It was a political appointment, not somebody who had grown up within the ranks of the FBI. And he screwed up a good amount while he was with the FBI, but still the credibility of those three letters and the fact that he had been in that role really paved the way for him to just create this business similar to those expert witnesses taking the stands at trial, where people would hire his company and they were all wealthy people ready to pay big money to hire his company. And he would be told what the result of his investigation needed to be. And he would go conduct an investigation that delivered those results.
Right. Yep. And that's how it happens.
And in this particular case, it made it even harder for the public, I think, because it's just natural for anyone from the outside with a casual knowledge of this case to think Penn State and the Penn State Board of Trustees would have a vested interest in proving their innocence. They want to preserve their reputation. They want to prove that their administrators could never have covered up crimes like this. But yet we have the Board of Trustees hiring the guy to prove that they are guilty. And so no one would look at that from the outside and go, how does that make sense? Well, it makes sense because, number one, the most powerful person on that Board of Trustees at the time was the governor of the state, who, for all history, as we're told in a couple of interviews that we do with former board members during this episode, the governor's role was always a silent role. And because it's a state university, governor always sat on the board, but no prior governor had ever taken an aggressive position on that board because it was seen as a conflict of interest to do anything like that. Well, not to Tom Corbett. Tom Corbett, in the days following the Sandusky's arrest, was the aggressor, along with the CEO of U.S. Steel, John Surma, in making the decision to fire Paterno and Spanier and the other two guys. And because he's the governor of the state, and because Surma and a bunch of other very powerful people within the state of Pennsylvania had made the decision to get rid of these people had to be guilty. And so that's the reason that they go out and they hire Louis Free. And some of, I think, the best stuff within this episode are the interviews with both Al Lord, who is a former board member and CEO of a large company in Pennsylvania, and Bob Capretta, a former Penn State football player, board member, and another business owner in the state. And these guys really take you about as deep into the huddle as you can get taken, and the state of what was going on inside of the board at the time, and then in the aftermath, how crazy it was and how badly the board was seeking protection, and that the hiring of Free and Free's investigative team was with the sole intent of exonerating the board. That was why the hire was made. That was why the almost $7 million was paid. It was to bring back a prepackaged result, and that result was to exonerate the board. So, Woody, anything at this point that you want to mention on that?
No, but I mean, it's kind of obvious, right? Like you said, they hire him and kind of tell him what they need basically to cover their ass. And so it's pretty obvious.
Well, so think about the methodology here, like what they did. So they strategically leaked a set of emails to CNN in advance of Free giving his public address on this. And the emails that are leaked are a series of emails that went between Graham Spanier, Tim Curley, who was the athletic director, and Gary Schultz, who was the VP at Penn State. And those emails were all in the aftermath of Paterno telling them that he had been visited by Mike McQuarrie, who who said he had seen Jerry Sandusky in the Penn State showers with a boy. There was nothing in what Paterno relayed to them that included any kind of a sex act. There's no evidence anywhere that they were told of any kind of a sex act. And we know that the reason McQuarrie went to see Paterno was because his father and Dr. Dranov, both of whom were required reporters and would have had to go to the police if Mike had reported any kind of sex act to them, told Mike to go to Paterno because it was not a sex act. But Paterno needed to know that Sandusky was bringing teenage boys into the Penn State showers.
Hey, y'all, changing my wardrobe from summer to fall? Hey, it's never easy. Luckily, Quince offers timeless and high-quality items I adore, ensuring my wardrobe stays fresh and I don't blow my budget. And there's nothing easier than going to Quince and choosing these high-quality items, like cashmere sweaters from $50, pants for every occasion, washable silk tops, and so much more. The best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes, and I love that. Look, I got the stainless steel Link Apple Watch band for $59.90, and it's heavy duty, it's awesome, and it's like $100 less than I could find anywhere else. And I also got 100% organic cotton fisherman quarter zip up sweater. The color is alabaster. Man, I can't wait to wear that dude out this fall. And Cindy got the Mongolian cashmere boat neck sweater and heather gray. And I'm telling you, these are classic pieces at a fraction of the price. Make switching seasons a breeze with Quince's high quality closet essentials. Go to quince.com/RLRC for free shipping on your order and 365 day returns. That's quince.com/RLRC to get free shipping and 365 day returns. Quince.com/RLRC. You'll thank me later. Do you want to set your child up for success? Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with a subject? Is your child ahead, not getting challenged enough in class? IXL Learning is an online learning program that enriches your homeschool curriculum. It offers practice in math, English, language arts, science, and social studies while adapting to each child, meeting them where they are. Plus, IXL encourages students to be curious and empowers them how to choose to learn. Now, Cindy used IXL in the classroom as a teacher and now uses it to homeschool our youngest son in the ninth grade. The videos are what she finds that benefits him most in math because he's a very visual learner. The perfect supplement to your homeschool curriculum, IXL offers interactive practice problems, educational game lessons, and video tutorials for every topic you're teaching at home. It's easy to use, time-saving, and everything on IXL is organized by grade, subject, topic, and subtopic, making it simple to find activities for the exact skills you're covering. Instant grading, helpful progress reporting. IXL offers instant feedback and explanations of new topics as kids use the program. Flexible and personalized. Kids can explore any topic in any grade level. They aren't forced into a single learning path like they are on other programs. If you're homeschooling your child because they were falling behind or because they were too far ahead, IXL is a great program to help them get the exact support they need. It's fun for kids, and kids love IXL's positive feedback, awards, and educational games. And it's trustworthy. IXL is trusted by 15 million students worldwide and has proven to improve performance in over 75 scientific research studies. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And Real Life Real Crime listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/today. Visit IXL.com/today to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
And so these guys become aware of it. They were aware of the 1998 expunged case involving Zach Constance, where Sandusky picks him up in the shower, and he comes home with the wet hair, and his mother asks for the case to be investigated. It's investigated, and they clear Sandusky, and then the case is supposed to be expunged. And so what Freed does is he uses 98 as the first base of this to set up that the administrators, Paterno, should have done something about 98. Paterno should have gone to the police about 1998. Well, the police investigated 1998 and exonerated Sandusky. So why in the hell would Paterno have gone to the police? The police went to Paterno.
Right.
That made no freaking sense at all. And then secondly, these emails are used to prove the conspiracy of a cover-up internally. And I mean, you and I are above average intelligence individuals. If we were somehow crazy enough to get ourselves involved in a conspiracy, we'd be meeting in a corner somewhere where we couldn't be heard, and no one we knew would see us, and we would discuss our plans. We wouldn't use Pennsylvania State email servers to discuss our conspiracy. But yet that's the assumption that Free makes, because what these emails are is they're those three discussing the fact that Paterno has told them that Sandusky was in the shower with a teenager. They are very sensitive to the important work of the second mile, and they don't want to do anything that endangers the second mile. They know Sandusky well. They know he's a weirdo and he's got quirks, and you know, he does some strange stuff, but they know he's not an abuser. And what they really want to do is get it through his head that he can't be showering with second mile kids on Penn State property. And so the decision, which gets made by Tim Curley, is that they're not going to go to the police with this report, because it would, he uses the term inhumane. It would be inhumane because it would expose Sandusky publicly to the ridicule that would go with that. And that, more importantly than that, it would potentially damage a critical program that was doing a lot of good in the community. And so they determined between the three of them that they are going to discuss the matter with Sandusky and impress upon him the importance that he change his behavior and not do this in Penn State facilities with any of the second mile kids. And so if you twist the correspondence a little bit, and you are prone to seeing this as a nefarious act, you can put together the story that Free puts together. I think there's a point in the exchange where Spanier acknowledges that Penn State could be, quote, vulnerable for not reporting the incident. And he says, quote, the only downside for us is if the message isn't heard, meaning the message to Sandusky to not be bringing kids into Penn State showers, if the message isn't heard and acted upon, and we then become vulnerable for not reporting it. So you could look at that in its most nefarious way and say, okay, they're conspiring with each other to hide the fact that a sex act has taken place. And the esteemed president of Penn State University, who has the highest level government security clearance a civilian can have and is involved with CIA and NSA and all these government agencies and all these things, and was himself a victim of child abuse, is saying we're going to hide the child abuse. And the only downside for us is if Sandusky doesn't listen to us and sexually abuses another kid, and yeah, then and then we get in trouble because we didn't report this.
I totally 1,000,000% believe it is a fact of them saying, okay, look, Sandusky is, you know, can't do that shit. They didn't know anything was going on. They had never told to him that it was a sexual act or whatever. But any reasonable person would be like, that's fucked up, right? He's in there, you know, grown ass man showering with teenage boys and doing whatever, holding them up to the shower, whatever. Even though it's not a sexual act, they're saying, hey, we got to make sure he doesn't do this shit in case he is, and he does something after it's been reported to us, then we're liable. And it's just like if I suspect a guy of a crime or something and, you know, tell me he's going to go rob a bank and he's thinking about robbing a bank or something like that, or may rob a bank, whatever, and I don't report it, and if something goes bad, then it could come back on me. That's probably not a good analogy. But what I think they're simply saying, look, tell the motherfucker don't shower with boys on state property. Go do it, you know, that way. If we don't address it and he does it and he actually fucks a kid, and then we are liable. And I mean, that's the only way any reasonable person could take those emails.
Yeah, I think because they not Spanier. Spanier really didn't know Sandusky, but Curley knew him well, and Schultz knew him pretty well. And a lot, this decision was made by Tim Curley. And of all of the people involved, Tim Curley has been the one who's just become a recluse. He's off the map. He's never given an interview. He's never been able to talk about this. I have a friend who grew up in State College and was close friends with several of the Curley kids and knew Tim Curley and knows that this entire thing just destroyed Tim Curley, not just because his reputation got destroyed publicly, but because when Sandusky came to talk to him about what happened in the McQuarrie incident, and the first time they talked, Sandusky, it didn't even register to Sandusky what Curley was talking about, because he came to him in February when McQuarrie was claiming this thing happened. But we know from episode one that it actually happened 6 weeks earlier than that. And I think we've proven through other episodes that it happened 6 weeks earlier than that. And so it doesn't register immediately to Sandusky that they're referring to him and Alan Myers, victim two, until the second time they talk about it. And then he says to Tim Curley, do you want to talk to him? I can make it. His name is Alan Myers, and if you want to have a conversation with them, I can just connect you to. And Curley doesn't do it. Curley makes the decision that it's not necessary to have the conversation with Myers. Because if Curley has the conversation with Myers, Myers is going to tell him the same story he told for a year up until the trial happened and he saw $7 million staring him in the face. And so Curley would have heard we were in Washington, PA earlier in the day at Jerry's book signing. He signed books. We drove all the way back to State College. We had a workout. After the workout, we went and took a shower. While we were showering, I started snapping a wet towel at Jerry and he started snapping it back. And, you know, we horse played for a couple minutes and got out of the shower, which was basically Meyer's story all the way through until he became convinced by Shubin, the attorney, that Sandusky was going to be found guilty. And so Curley blames himself, and he's been off the grid since then. And we tried really hard to get an interview with him, because I think his story would really matter here. But we've extensively interviewed Graham Spanier about this and Gary Schultz about this. And here's the amazing thing about Free. And again, it's John calls it the mystique of the FBI. But I mean, this guy had real tradecraft. I mean, he used tradecraft in pulling this con over the public. He claimed that it was through their great investigative measures, that it was forensic investigating that got them these emails, that allowed him to uncover this culture of corruption at Penn State. When what we find out is that the emails were in a file that Gary Schultz had kept for any time there was an employee misconduct allegation. He had a special employee misconduct file that he had kept that you know, he's retired as all of this is happening. And so his former executive assistant finds that employee misconduct file, brings it to him, and the next day he turns it over to his attorney, who turns it over to prosecutors. So the quote-unquote massive evidence that Free's investigative team, through skill and luck, and I wouldn't discount either, is what he says, is the evidence they discover that allows them to really crack the cover-up case, when no, it was an email file given by Gary Schultz to the prosecutors. Yeah. And if the prosecutors thought that that file actually included real evidence that there was a cover-up, then it would have been used at trial. Right. And it wasn't used at trial because they knew that's not what the email said. And so what Free does is he uses the tradecraft and the mystique to they tell everyone that there's been a website malfunction and the entire report can't be distributed. So they just have an executive summary that is given to everyone. And then he goes and he does his public press conference, and the guy's polished and he's done this a million times. And he comes off as knowing all of the facts of the case, and that the emails are conclusive, and that Paterno should have acted on 1998, and that there's a culture of corruption, and this is all about protecting the football program. And he even goes so far as to use the crazy janitor story, the quote-unquote victim eight story, where we have this excited utterance ruling that a janitor can use hearsay evidence to claim that Sandusky committed a sex act with a teenage boy in a shower room in Penn State in 2000, even though the janitor who actually witnessed the event that supposedly happened told investigators three times in an interview that it was not Sandusky that he saw. So, I mean, the whole, and then they decide that that guy has dementia and therefore cannot testify. And so they allow this entire hearsay evidence to come in through this one janitor. They say they're going to have a second janitor who's going to corroborate his story. That person never testifies. And yet Sandusky gets convicted on all of the counts tied to the whole janitor's thing. And so Free uses the janitor's thing to prove the culture of corruption, because these janitors were so scared that they would get fired for coming forward with the story about what they witnessed in the shower that they didn't, and they buried it for 11 years until after Sandusky's arrest. So his the cornerstones are 98, the email surrounding the McQuarrie incident, and the janitors to prove the culture of corruption and the cover up. And you know, the real point of episode 10 is to show just how far the people of privilege involved in this whole mess, the board of trustees, the governor's office, the prosecutors, how far all of them were willing to go to cement a narrative they knew was false to cover their own asses. And the administrators in Sandusky were sacrificed. They were paternal. They were collateral damage to cover the asses of the governor and the board of trustees.
Yeah. And back to the 98 thing again, there's nothing to be expunged. It was investigated. There's no charge, no crime. And so it can't be expunged, but it would have been in the files. That's neither here nor there. They didn't act upon it. And that's what the fact of the matter is, right? So when they go back later on, when they get the complaints and they start looking in, they're going to naturally run like what's his name had the file on the Sandusky, the employee file. They're going to pull it. It's going to be in there, neither here nor there. It's still, it was non-founded. They didn't charge with anything, so it shouldn't amount to dick. They shouldn't have used that as a basis for the jumpstart of the investigation. They should have done is they could have just totally discarded that and just gone with the kids that are saying what they're saying, right? And the charges later on. But it goes back to them trying to lay the bricks for the foundation of saying that Penn State, has this history of covering up. Now, the janitor shit, I said it from the beginning, and I'll say it again. I don't believe Sandusky ever fucked a kid in a shower. He may have played around with him, not sexually, but, if he was guilty of the pedophile stuff, and, the grooming stuff would have been going on. Oh, look, I'm so important. We could work out at Penn State. We could take a shower. I can get you a shower at Penn State and take you to ball games, whatever. The email things, that's bullshit. And I'll call bullshit on that. And a free report is bullshit too. I mean, the janitor thing is just the stupidest thing. I mean, why do you need a janitor to say that he saw Sandusky raping a kid and you don't have the kid? There's no victim, no crime. No victim, no crime, supposedly. And you can't do hearsay. So I agree with you on all this. And the emails, I think the email thing is more offensive than the 1998 alleged expunged deal. Mm-hmm. And the fact that they agreed, hey, we can't have this motherfucker taking showers with kids on our campus using our facilities because we'll be liable if he does do something. That's what they were saying. Because we know about it now. Look, it's just like, the kid, it didn't have to be Sandusky. The kid had been an employee, alleged theft or whatever, and it wasn't proved. And they would say, looking in the girls' locker room, or say, but it's not proven. So you tell them, you ask them about it, and they say no. I said, look, motherfucker, don't go around that locker room anymore, because if you do, it's already been reported to us, then we'll be liable for whatever it is, actions that you're doing. That's sort of what they're trying to do in these emails. Right. No doubt about that.
Well, and Sandusky was just so out of it and unaware of how far outside of the guidelines of acceptable, appropriate adult to child behavior. I mean, he was living in a different world. In 98, the cops ask him not to bring that boy, right, Zach Constance, into a Penn State shower ever again. And he doesn't ever bring that boy into a Penn State shower again. But that should have been a signal to any normal person. That should have been a signal to, hey, maybe this is not something that I should be doing at this point. There's different stuff going on in the world now, and people draw the wrong conclusions, and maybe to me, my behavior is completely benevolent, and all I want to be is a father to these kids who desperately need a father figure, but I've taken it too far, and it's time to take it back. Well, 3 years later, he's in that shower again with another teenage boy, and putting himself in a vulnerable position to logically get accused of things because no one thinks that's normal in 2001, because it's not.
Yeah.
And so
it's like we were talking earlier about people like the harassment thing or whatever. And then, you know, cops come and talk to you, or someone goes and has a talk to you about it. And you're like, somebody came and talked to you about something that you did, even if you didn't think you were doing any wrong, you'd be like, motherfucker, I'm not doing that shit again. Right. But he did it. And that's where they built the case of it. Good, bad, or indifferent, he did it. And that's where it, you know, starts feeding into these, all the allegations and stuff. Right.
Yeah. Nobody scared him straight, so to speak. And yeah, right. So
no shit about that. Yeah.
But I think what we see in this episode is that, you know, this case is, there is a conspiracy of self-interest where very powerful people are put into very difficult positions where their reputations are threatened, and they decide that given their power and their authority, they're willing to weaponize that to protect themselves. And so the governor is weaponizing the power of his office. The board of trustees are weaponizing the power of the board of trustees, and the folks that are being sacrificed, Paterno, Spanier, Schultz, Curley, Paterno's dead, so they no longer give a shit. And the others are just the collateral damage of this very effed up situation, but the governor ain't going down for it. And these C-suite guys that are on the board of trustees aren't going down for it. And so it's all just going to be buried. And I just would submit to everyone that if we know that, and by the way, the board of trustees, I don't know which year exactly it was, but it's multiple years later, but the board of trustees eventually disavows the findings of the Free Report. So there's enough new people come onto the board over time to where the board makes a decision to disavow the report. So the report they paid almost $7 million for, years later, they discredit that entire report, right?
Right.
And the Paterno family settles, and these are sealed. We have no idea what the financial consideration was for any of this, but the Paterno family, which was very active legally against the board for years, after the board discredits the Free Report, so the report that said Paterno was a conspirator, the Paterno family, Sue Paterno, settles with the board. And one of the conditions of that settlement is that no one in the Paterno family will ever speak publicly about the case. Mm-hmm. And so we've tried really, really hard to get Sue Paterno, to get Jay Paterno. Scott Paterno only is part of the story here that you've heard because he made the phone call after Zig was already recording his phone calls, and it came together by accident, right? So the Paternos, no one in the Paterno family can exonerate Sandusky. They can't go back and told the truth instead of some of Scott's lies because they can't do it legally. The board has done what the board's done. We didn't talk about the FBI, the NCAA part of this, but the NCAA part of this is just unbelievable as well, which we get to at the back of this episode, where John actually gets the late Franco Harris to come to Los Angeles and directly challenge the president of the NCAA about the NCAA about the taking away of the Paterno victories and what they did in this case. And if you look at it, the NCAA takes action less than 2 weeks after the Free report comes out, because all of these people were coordinated. Free was competing for the NCAA's business. He wanted to become the official investigator on behalf of the NCAA. Well, what most people don't realize is that the NCAA is forced about 2 years later to reinstate all of Paterno's wins. So Paterno becomes once again the winningest coach. So all of that stuff gets quote unquote fixed, except it doesn't really get publicly fixed. There's not a lot of noise about it. Paterno statue does not go back up. You know, they tore down the Paterno statue at the stadium. It does not go back up. And so Paterno's reputation remains tarnished to this day because people don't understand that the very body that fired him and then paid for a investigation to find him guilty, that then later discredited that investigation they paid for to find him guilty, that then had the NCAA remove the penalties tied to him and give him back his victories. I mean, that's exoneration. That's exoneration. But he didn't get it. He didn't get it publicly. His name wasn't cleared publicly. The statue didn't go back up. And most people out there, if you say the name Joe Paterno, still think that Joe Paterno was guilty of participating in a cover-up of Jerry Sandusky's alleged crimes for to protect the reputation of the Penn State football program. And that's just complete bullshit.
Totally agree. On one thing, and that's Paterno, as nobody would, unless they were raping kids too, along with you. Paterno did no dick about it. And showering with boys does not equal rape. And he did what anybody else would have done. And that's that. I mean, he's too fucking smart. Paterno is too smart to let something like that. I mean, he passes it on. He surrounds himself with the best people and he passed it on to the guy to look into it or whatever. Nothing came of it. And his son really fucked him. Or fuck Sandusky when he goes out that night at the candlelight vigil and says, pray for the victims or whatever. I still don't believe Paterno had anything to do with it. That now, that's just my belief.
Well, and thank you for that. So what I would ask of everybody is just to consider that if we know that this much of this story, the painting of these exemplary individuals, these four people who had each of them distinguished careers and great reputations, Spanier, Paterno, Schultz, Curley, if things would be manipulated to the extent of labeling them, convicting them of a cover-up, sending three of them to prison. Three of them went to prison. Spanier, Curley, Schultz all went to prison. Paterno died in January of 2012, or else who knows whether they would have tried to send an 84-year-old Joe Paterno to prison. But if those in power would maneuver so much to cover their own asses as to ruin those four careers, do you think that maybe there's a chance that those same people involved with lawyers, involved with judge, involved with therapists would create a scenario where people who weren't abused are invited to come forward and claim abuse in order to be handed checks worth millions of dollars to help again them cement their case that this was all true. And the last couple of episodes here, I think we're going to be able to, present evidence that I think will take you over the finish line, that that's exactly what happened here. And I think the medical records we talked about last week are certainly a piece that, if not conclusive, at least leave you scratching your head going, could anybody with that kind of condition actually be this kind of a serial abuser? And could anybody with that condition, would it not be clear to people that they were abusing that they were unique and had differentiated anatomy, and that those people would have given the acts that he was accused of with those people, they would have clearly recognized that and had said something at some point, because it would have gone a long way toward proving that they were abused, the fact that they would know that, and yet no one ever said anything about it. And so that's really where I hope we can go from here is we're going to go through the settlements. We're going to go through the stories that are told to a man by the name of Ira Lupert, who runs a very big hedge fund in the state of Pennsylvania to this day, who was on the board and was the individual who was given the responsibility of deciding what to pay out. And we actually have an interview with him that is done by fake accuser that is part of the end of our series. This former member of Second Mile, AJ Dillon, who decides to claim that he was a victim of Sandusky because he wants to understand how the sausage is made. And he gets manipulated by the attorney into changing his story. He gets manipulated by a therapist into trying to craft that story of abuse and put it in the right setting so that they could ask for the most money. And we really get a picture of the inside. And I think between these next couple coming down, we're going to see how just a catastrophe like this could actually happen, because it becomes a perfect storm of self-interest where all of a sudden there's this unbelievable get rich quick opportunity for former Second Milers who are willing to lie because they think somebody is already guilty. They're just piling on, and they're piling on is helping the good guys put the bad guy away for a long time. And they're piling on is they're going to be able to be anonymous, and they're going to get paid millions of dollars. Given their circumstances in life, I don't know what I would do in those circumstances. And so,
well, looking forward to it and hearing the rest of it. Right. So
you got it, bud. And thanks for your thoughts on this episode. I think they're right on. And if you haven't listened to this episode, folks, again, I think it's really well done. We won some awards with this series. We got a lot of recognition with this series, this episode in particular, because it exposes, it's supposed to be an episode about corruption of the administrators, but it's actually an illustration of the corruption of those charging the administrators with corruption. And so I think it's fascinating from that standpoint. So we'll be back at you next week.
Yeah, y'all. It's with the benefit of hindsight is a podcast, right, Mike?
Yes, it is. With the benefit of hindsight, it's out there on all the platforms. And this was episode 10, Free as a Bird, that we discussed here today on the Nittany Line.
All right, buddy. I appreciate you.
You too, pal. Have a good week. I'll talk to you.
All right. Peace.
AgLads.